The audible of the best in Bitcoin. This is the Cryptoconomy. What is up, crew? Welcome back to the show. I hope you all have your Bitcoin savings account running strong. If you've already set it up, well, then you're already stacking Bitcoin. And you don't have to do anything. You're stacking Bitcoin while you're listening to this show automatically. So go check out swanbitcoin.com if you have not yet. They are supporting this show, and those guys are awesome. We are reading today a piece by a first-time author on the show, actually, Sven Schneiders, over at the blog limitlesscuriosity.com. And this really made me readjust some. A perspective that I had, very similar to yesterday's article by Nick Szabo. But this one is titled, I don't want to lead the article too much, so we're just going to go ahead and jump right into it. And it's titled, Stop Calling for a Free Market in Money. There are many people, coming mostly from the Austrian School of Economics, who argue for a free market in money. A good example being Thorsten Polite. I admire his knowledge about economics, which is, unfortunately, only exceeded by his ignorance of Bitcoin. Although I mostly agree with their reasoning and share the enthusiasm for such a free market, I cannot stop being astonished by the naivety of the idea. The argument for a free market in money is often brought forward when discussing the future of money, and more importantly, when trying to answer the question what the best candidate for a new basis of our monetary system might be. Faced with such a difficult question, the easiest way out is to argue for a free market, which then decides this question. This reasoning is used in many other cases where it is valid, and it might sound valid here. But as I will show, it is not. I want to emphasize again that I am in favor of a free market in money, and I do not want any form of money to be banned. Everyone should be free to choose. However, arguing for fewer regulations so we can have a free market to finally decide which money is the best is not only unproductive, but also ignorant of the lesson history has taught us. But let us not get ahead of ourselves, and first, take a look at the argumentation. Free market in money. The argumentation starts with the correct observation that nowadays, we do not have a free market in money. The state has put in place many regulations that make using alternative forms of money more difficult and costly. For example, legal tender laws. For some payments, taxes, paying with a form of money other than fiat, for example, US dollars, euros, etc., is not possible. So, in good Austrian and libertarian tradition, those people call for fewer regulations to establish a free market. This free market will then decide which form of money, fiat, gold, Bitcoin, etc., is the best. The stance is, quote, after the state has stopped regulating this market, we can finally have a real competition to see which form of money prevails. End quote. Gold is bad money. This reasoning misses the crucial point that money which cannot succeed under the oppression of government is not a valid candidate for the basis of our monetary system. In other words, if a form of money cannot thrive under the current regulations, it is bad money. This is the lesson people should have learned from the failure of gold. Gold is good money, except that it is not. It is only good money as long as the government allows it to function. But as history has shown, it is awful once the state decides to outlaw it. This makes it a bad form of money. The physical nature of gold makes it extremely difficult to store and validate by yourself, which leads to centralization. I have explained this main flaw of gold in more detail in this essay, link provided. This centralization made it possible for governments to end the gold standard by easily taking control of most of the supply. Perfect environment. calling for a free market in money is extremely naive and short-sighted because it is exactly the ability to succeed under oppression and regulations that makes a particular form of money good in the first place. The importance of this insight cannot be overstated. You do not want money which only works when the state allows it to work, but fails in the most crucial moments. The money market we have right now, with all these regulations and taxes, is a great environment to test all the different forms of money and see which one prevails. It is this market in which money has to thrive, and not in some ideal free market. We need a form of money that works under the most hostile conditions, i.e., even after being banned. The only viable candidate for this is Bitcoin. Again, thriving in a free market without government interference and regulations is not sufficient to make a form of money good money. Good money needs to work in the real world against real adversity and not only succeed in an ideal free market. Bitcoin against all odds. The second reason I call arguing for a free market in money naive is that governments and central banks will not give up their power over the monetary system. It is not the free market that makes Bitcoin good money possible, but rather Bitcoin that makes the free market possible. Arguing for a free market in money so we can finally decide on the best money is putting the cart before the horse. Good money, money outside of the control of the state, needs to come first. Then afterward, the state will get smaller and regulations will be cut back because there won't be any money left to support such a huge state. It is not by trying to convince those in power that we will change the world and establish a free market, but by the unstoppable force of Bitcoin. Bitcoin does not ask for permission, and Bitcoin does not depend on rolling back the state first. It succeeds against all odds. That is what makes it great money. Conclusion. I hope that this essay is sufficient to convince those who argue in favor of a free market for money that, 1, it is not sufficient for money to only work under a benevolent, free market embracing state, but that good money needs to work especially in those circumstances where it is facing adversity. We do not want another bad money like gold that fails us in times we need it the most. And 2, it is naive to hope that by arguing in favor of a free market in money, the state and central banks will realize their mistakes and finally embrace it. As always, thank you for reading my essay. All right, and that closes us out. Again, this was on limitlesscuriosity.com, and it was by Sven Schneiders. I will have all the links available in the show notes, so you can check out the other article that he linked to, and a lot of other great stuff on this blog that I only kind of bumped into recently. So don't forget to check that out in the show notes. Let's take a quick break and hit our sponsor, and then I want to talk about this idea. You know, I have made this exact mistake that he's talking about in this article, is thinking that it would be good for us to finally have a free market in money so that we can, you know, quote unquote, choose the best money. And because it is, it's kind of the default assumption when with the Austrian mindset, the Austrian and or libertarian mindset, is that the market is best at, you know, choosing the correct solution to whatever said perceived problem that we are facing. And I think that remains true in almost every case, except for, I think money is actually an outlier in this area. I think it's actually an exception because of what money does, because of the role that it plays in society. The point of money is to protect the free market, is to protect exchange and the value of exchange and the communication of value. It is a tool of protection, a tool of defense. And a good money cannot protect the free market if it cannot survive in its absence. The quote from this one that comes to mind is that it's not a free market that makes Bitcoin or good money possible, but rather that Bitcoin or good money makes the free market possible. A free market is the consequence of good money, not the other way around. And I think the easy way to, maybe an easy way to demonstrate this or illustrate it is that what is the adversary of money? Like, what in particular is it that money is attempting to prevent against or secure against? It's the confiscation of value. It's the ability to communicate value external to, or I guess in spite of, any attempt to obscure that communication or alter that communication through theft, through counterfeiting, through violence, through, you know, oppressive government control of our decisions. That means that we have some tiny portion of the economy. We have violence deciding what the value of a thing is rather than the market. Money is the foundation of society. You know, it's not like just finding the best bread on the shelf. You know, if we had a bread czar and someone, you know, took control of all of the production of bread, the fallout wouldn't really be that big of a deal, you know, in the grand scheme. It's easy for most people to bake their own bread. Almost everybody has the tools, and the market for alternatives, like just like not eating bread or eating some other good or producing it for yourself, it's massive. So in doing so, you want a generally free market to find the best bread. Bread doesn't need to be defensible because it's not a foundation of the market. It's got nothing to do with the operation of the market. The bread itself doesn't. But money is critical to whether or not we have a market in the first place. Money, by necessity, has no alternative. It is that which we use to communicate in a collective way. It is how we, it's the bedrock by which all other trade, every market, every industry, every good, the entirety of the bread market included, is made possible and secured. It's how we communicate our intersubjective values between all of it. It's the operating system of economic trade. That means that it's literally the means to all of our ends. So we have no idea if it's any good at what it's supposed to do. We don't know if it's succeeding, if it will succeed in the real world against real adversaries, unless it works under oppressive and intrusive governments and unfavorable regulatory environments. If it doesn't, well, then it's no better than an antivirus software that only works when there are no computer viruses. I mean, would anybody pay for Norton antivirus if they literally said, you know, as long as you don't encounter any viruses, this is going to work great for you? And Norton sure as shit isn't going to test their software in an environment with no viruses and no malware. That would be the absolute worst possible thing that they could do. You know, back to my endless references to Anti-Fragile lately, Nassim Taleb's book. You know, Bitcoin is made stronger. Bitcoin is an anti-fragile system. Just like the economy, just like, you know, organic systems, it's made stronger and adapts specifically because of stressors and the inclusion of adversaries or the encounters with adversaries, not in spite of. If we give it too happy of an environment, it will grow weak and feeble. It will extend or keep imbalances or invulnerabilities that should have been found, that should have been closed or altered. It's like, you know, the internet has not really had until very recently, a giant intrusive adversary. Like throughout its early environment, the government and the regulatory environment for the internet was pretty welcoming. So what do? We didn't bother encrypting anything. That was a bad choice. That made the internet weak. That made the internet susceptible to control. It is only now that we're finally making those changes that are necessary. And it's only now that we're seeing the government constantly trying to go after, you know, outlawing encryption, 1,000 different clever and sneaky and just evil ways of just destroying everyone's privacy and security in order to gain more control. It's now that we're realizing this should have been built in. We should never have assumed that we weren't going to encounter those adversaries. Bitcoin is no different. And we don't want that same thing to happen in Bitcoin. We don't want to put $10 trillion of value in this and then find out that, oh crap, we left A or B too centralized. Oh, well, shit, DNS is really kind of a giant choke point that we should have figured out. Bitcoin must work in the world that exists, the one full of government overreach and control and oppression, not in some imaginary world where it would be much better for us to have. If we have a money that can, then we get that future. If we don't, then it does us no good asking for the corrupt to change their behavior. And that's his other point or whatever, is that his second reason or whatever for saying that calling for a free market in money is incredibly naive and, you know, backwards, essentially. Do we really think it's going to get us anywhere? That governments and central banks are just going to give up their power over the monetary system? They're going to be like, you've got a good point. Let's take all of the things that make us powerful and important and give any sort of perceived importance in society whatsoever, and let's give it away. And that's why I think he's right, and that's kind of the foundation of, you know, why I believe so strongly in Bitcoin, is that gold isn't an option. Like he said, gold only works when everybody lets it work. It's a great monetary instrument from the context of does it produce good prices, but it's a terrible one in a defense of a free market. It provides very little, if any, protection, which we have seen, which we have witnessed, we have seen demonstrated in history. We know it's not going to do us any good to go back to a gold standard. It is at best a Band-Aid. Reminds me of the Hayek quote. One of my favorite quotes. Hayek has so many freaking great quotes. It's like back in the 1980s. I'll look it up real quick so I get it right. Okay. I don't believe we shall ever have a good money again before we take the thing out of the hands of government. That is, we can't take it violently out of the hands of government. All we can do is, by some sly, roundabout way, introduce something that they can't stop. And how will we know that we've found something that they can't stop if they never try? This article really got me immediately thinking, because, like I said earlier, is it's really easy to fall into the, oh, a free market is better. And like after reading this, it was like obvious. It was like, well, yeah, holy crap. Yeah. Like I was totally thinking wrong. And maybe it's just the sheer fact that I didn't really think that hard about it. Because if I'd applied many, many of the lessons and ideas we've talked about on the show, it seems pretty obvious that it has to come about. It has to mature in an adversarial environment, or it won't stand up to adversaries. And the adversaries we want it to stand up to are powerful, like large, powerful governments. Therefore, it needs powerful, corrupt governments and central banks as adversaries to prove, to mature in such a way as to make them obsolete. And that's why I'm here in Bitcoin, is because I think we found that. Regardless of whether we found it in full, Bitcoin is the only candidate that even comes close right now. So it's basically, in my book, it's a choice between, do we give up or do we try Bitcoin? Because nothing else even holds a candle to the potential of Bitcoin in actually solving this problem. Everything else is a non-solution. Everything else is either, the only other even half decent candidate is gold, which we already saw fail spectacularly. So I hope that's enough to get anyone who hasn't started their Bitcoin savings plan to start their Bitcoin savings plan at Swan Bitcoin. Huge thanks to those guys for supporting this show, the Audible of the Bitcoin space. And I've got, I just uploaded the audiobook for Inventing Bitcoin by Jan Pritzker. So that should be out soon. We have had a nightmare of a time dealing with that stupid ACX, like the Audible platform. It is it is hard to believe how bad their interface and like workflow is. We have spent a month literally just trying to get it set up so that I can be the narrator of his book, like literally just basic what the service does and what the interface is supposed to do for us. I'm not going to get into it because I'm going to freak out, but it has been a nightmare. And this is like the third time that I've had to do this. And I had to set up a whole different account because how you set up your account, I'm not going to get into it. Too much. I'm going to get triggered. Okay. But yes, we got Inventing Bitcoin coming, and I'll officially make this announcement on the show. This will soon be rebranding to Bitcoin Audible. And you've heard me use those terms many times. This is the Audible of the Bitcoin space. Well, it's going to be Bitcoin Audible soon. So keep an eye out for that. I've just got like a lot of the pieces are finally coming together, so I feel comfortable talking about it. And it will be part of the Cryptoconomy Network. So we will still be the Cryptoconomy. You'll still be able to find me from that and from the cryptoconomy.com. But I'm going to separate that out so that as an avenue to expand what we're doing here and the scope of things that I can cover. So I hope you guys like that. You know, give me your feedback. Let me know what you think. Do you like the name Bitcoin Audible? The crew seems pretty happy with it, and I've been sharing a lot of this process as I've moved forward with them, and they seem on board, having a lot of fun with it. So I hope you guys enjoy it too. Keep an ear out. Bitcoin Audible is on the horizon. Okay, last just a thank you to Sven Schneiders for this piece. I can't remember who linked me to this, unfortunately, but somebody sent it to me, and a thank you to whoever that was, because I'm glad to have stumbled upon this, and there's some really cool stuff up here. So definitely check out the blog limitlesscuriosity.com, and yeah, check out Sven on Twitter. I will have the links to all that great stuff in the show notes. Don't forget that you can join the Cryptoconomy Crew Telegram chat. All you got to do is donate. I just reserve it for supporters of the show, people who I know have skin in the game in keeping this project alive with me. So donate anyway, tip in. I recommend patreon.com just because it's easy for me. But if you do like just over Lightning or Bitcoin address or, you know, BTC Pay on the website, thecryptoeconomy.com, just shoot me a message. Shoot me a message and I'll get you an invite and bring you in, hang out with the rest of the crew. We have a lot of fun in there. Yeah, the other way though, if you know you can't support monetarily or with sound money at the moment, I know this is trying times, but there is one way that you can always, always help this show out, is send it out. Share it to everyone you know in Bitcoin or who is interested in Bitcoin or is peeking their way down the rabbit hole. Send them to thecryptoeconomy.com. Send them to soon to be Bitcoin Audible, and hopefully they'll discover the power and the revolutionary potential of the Bitcoin system just like we did. So thank you all. I love you. I'll catch you on the next one. And until then, take it easy, guys. We'll be right back.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.